Now it is time for us to get started with the first hour of the Dr. Futures program.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Futures Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Happy Future Tuesday, everyone. Welcome to our world, our shared world of the future as it unfolds in the present. A lot of interesting news this week. Looking forward to sharing them with you. We are enjoying a beautiful sunny day here in Santa Cruz. Looking forward to taking a little beach walk, probably with MZ right after the show. Mrs. Future, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, honey.
Yeah. And we are here just the day after my big birthday.
Big birthday weekend.
Thanks to you. Thanks, Mrs. Future, for helping me have a most memorable celebration.
Oh, it was all our friends, honey. All I did was try and manage some of the food.
For those of you who have socialized with us, we invited just 100 of our closest friends in the area here, and it was a bash to remember. We even had a live Fantuzzi, a global troubadour, who came and was the highlighter with Gary Carpenter, another great musician. A great dancing and music to bring in my birthday. Thank you.
That was epic. Very memorable.
Yeah, shout out to those
guys. Love you guys. Thanks, everybody, for coming.
This is going to be an interesting show this week. We have Lars coming in, Lars Ling, from the Nordic Impact Week. The Nordics invade Silicon Valley once a year and impact us with the latest and greatest Nordic technologies and startups that threaten to change us all. So we'll find out about what the Nordics are up to at 3 o'clock for the second hour. This hour, we're going to go a little bit into our own news for what's unfolding in future news for this part of the world, or maybe for this part of the universe, I should say, given that Stephen Hawking's details of his new book recently came out. Mm-hmm. Got a little report on that when we get some bandwidth here.
Right.
More immediately, Paul G. Allen has died, the Microsoft co-founder, somebody that...
Paul Allen.
That affects those of us that have been in the microcomputer revolution for some time and reporting on it.
That was Bill Gates' original partner, huh?
Yeah.
In Microsoft.
Co-founded Microsoft with Bill Gates. He's the one who claimed to have come up with the name Microsoft. Mm-hmm. And he's one of the richest men in the world, so he had his mark on many things. He invested a lot in technology, a lot in innovation. He financed quite a few artists that we know that explored the cutting edge of technology and art. Sports ownership, I believe the Seahawks were one of his investments. Global philanthropy, space exploration, museums, I think the Rock and Roll Museum, Science Fiction Museum. Are some of his legacies. And sadly, he died at the age of 65, 2 weeks after announcing that he had recurrence of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Mm. Personal computing would not have existed as it is now without him, according to Bill Gates. Bill was really close with him. He was a partner and a close friend of his. Allen's life was pretty deep and broad, and it covered so much of the evolution of the last part of the 20th century.
Oh, I bet there's so many people here in the Bay Area who can tell stories about how he pretty much significantly affected their life. He brought so many research projects forward.
He had little gatherings of people that were pioneers in the computer industry, brought them together to share their stories with each other, which is something that's still can be done in more depth, I think.
Sure.
Something that we'll probably do.
Yeah, cross-pollination is really what has made our era great the way it is. So many people with a new opportunity to share their unique brilliance in a forum where others can find out about it through the internet, through social networking, just through networks of people who share affinities.
Yeah, yeah. And he was interested in the brain. The microcomputer is kind of a extension of the brain in many ways. He started the Allen Brain Institute, which is cutting-edge brain science, and that's part of his legacy now as well. And space exploration. He was enthralled with expanding into the solar system economy, which is a golden age of space that we're about to embark upon.
Yeah, we're definitely, that's the new frontier, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very amazing. His interest in such things will go on as investments in the future. Mm-hmm. Hats off to Paul Allen and his legacy for innovation and philanthropy and bets for the future to us all.
Boy, end of an era. The pioneers are becoming the ancestors.
Yeah. Speaking of which, there are new types of conferences coming in Silicon Valley now that kind of reflect this more of a wider point of view. Oh, yes, thank you. Gregory also points out the Allen Telescope Array. That's a very important legacy, too. That was part of his investment in SETI, in search for extraterrestrial intelligence, to create a large array of telescopes, radio telescopes, that created an array that gave us even better connectivity with the universe. Mm-hmm. He's a benefactor of that. Thanks. That's reminding me of that. I was going to mention that this wide range of interest that he had is something that actually is shared by quite a few people these days, not so rich as him, but nonetheless, as Buckminster Fuller would call it, being a comprehensive generalist, not really being an expert per se in one thing or the other, but having this generalist consciousness that allows you to look at the world from a more of a holistic point of view, mm-hmm. embracing many points of view and many different disciplines. In that spirit, there is a conference coming up called Trans Tech. Transformative Technology Conference.
Building. Oh, that sounds really exciting, actually.
Yeah.
You know what? We're just about due for a break, and I think we might want to spend more than 30 seconds talking about this TransTech Conference.
Sure.
So how about if we very quickly let people know that we'll be right back?
Yes, Mrs. Future. Well, happily.
You may be the future, but I'm the timekeeper.
Oh, dear. Okay. Well, be the good timekeeper that you are, and I'll see you all in a few minutes, everyone. TransTech. Think about that. A few minutes. Yes, what do we fear? We fear being our wholest self. I think that's probably our biggest fear. We're bigger than we realize.
And want we're me to afraid read you that quote from our birthday invitation?
Sure.
Okay, let me just get that out of here for you. This is the Nelson Mandela quote, the famous one. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small doesn't serve the world.
I like that. Your playing small doesn't serve the world.
Yes, and that's what we were celebrating this birthday weekend with you and all our friends.
Yeah, let's play it a little bigger, shall we?
Let's play big.
All right. So this is an interesting conference. It's not just about tech. TransTech is about a more global vision. They say their mission is to permanently move 1 billion people into a state of fundamental well-being and flourishing by 2030.
That's a pretty good vision.
Move 1 billion people into a state of fundamental well-being and flourishing by 2030. Permanently move them.
Permanently.
Yeah,
that's right. We need to just change our belief systems and accept that what we put our faith into is what actually happens in the world.
Okay, so let's look at the things that they're bringing up. They think they can help do this.
Okay. I'm all ears.
I'm scanning this. It looks like neuroscience breakthroughs in psychology, entrepreneurship.
Neuroscience, that's a shortcut for brain chemistry.
Transformative Tech Lab. is one thing. There's a transformative technology laboratory mm-hmm. by Nicole Bradford. It's going to be there.
Cole Bradford.
Yeah,
okay.
Don't know much about that. Need to research that more. Joe Hudson, director of One Earth Capital. So yes, the future needs to be run on some money. So obviously he's going to be looking at his approach to bringing in capital for the new paradigms of reality here. High Fidelity. Okay, the founder of High Fidelity, Philip Rosedale, is going to be there. Okay, High Fidelity is the latest and greatest virtual reality world where you go and you meet other people and hang out with them and exchange information or sing songs or listen to poetry. It's a space for interactivity, a social space. So they consider that. And I agree with that. I think that virtual reality will become one of the great social milieus of the near future because you can meet anybody there, anywhere in the world. It brings you into one space in the present, and you can be anywhere physically. And
I
think that's profound.
Yeah, what VR virtual reality is doing is collapsing the idea that space separates us.
Yeah, it's like phones did, you know, for telecommunications, but we're just getting more immersive with our media. It's not just voice or not just watching video, but it's in a place that you are sharing as a group where it feels like the space is created, not just the conversation in the space.
Yeah. We've changed the rules of how you participate in society. It used to be that where you lived was the most important thing. And so regional politics and the local idea of the commons and democracy being about a place where you would go and speak up for your opinions. Well, now the commons is happening around your ideas. It's happening in a way where you seek out people who share your preferences.
So online commons, which are more real in a sense, or where you feel like you're there. Because it makes it real because when you control everything that you see and hear by putting on the gear, you are creating your reality. It literally, our brain assembles reality.
Well, you have the ability to X out those things that you don't like.
This creates new information for your senses to process. Yes, so you're literally somewhere. You're in the holodeck.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, who else they have? They have Dr. Ben Goertzel coming in. He's an interesting guy, too. He's a chief scientist at Singularity.net, and he is very much involved with creating robots that are androids, android robots that look like humans, that have advanced artificial intelligence.
Yeah, we saw a debate between two of his robots, right? The male and the female robots.
He's like Dr. Sung in Star Trek, who invented Data. You know,
Or Dr. Frankenstein New Millennium.
It's a deep mythology, creating life, right? It's creating, if it's not biological life, it's artificial life, but it's life of some sort, something magic about it. Mm-hmm. He's been working on this for some time, and he's got a series of robots. Mostly Sophia is known because she was granted
citizenship in Saudi Arabia.
Citizenship in Saudi Arabia. Hope
this
she doesn't say the wrong
trick,
thing.
Boy, are we going to have to fight for our rights with robots? Giving citizenship out to people who haven't come through the birth canal, that's a pretty weird future.
Yeah,
Cloud Atlas.
I wonder if Sophia had any controversial things to say about the Yemen war, or what the Saudis would do to her citizenship.
Yeah, is she allowed to drive?
Yeah, they cut off her head. She could just create a new better one.
You know, my goodness.
The whole thing of that technology of trying to kill it. Minerva? Minerva was it?
Minerva was the serpent-headed goddess who, when you looked at her, you would freeze. You'd turn into stone.
So the AI robots are like that.
Mm.
You know,
I see.
Of course. How could they not be?
Oh, yeah.
Things can be rebuilt, get better. You know, it's not going to end it.
Mm.
Interesting. They also have some experts on the gut biome. Mm-hmm. That's another cutting edge thing, too, about how much the billions of microorganisms in our bodies are affecting our health and how important they are.
Love my biome.
That's right. Your biome, the 7.5 pounds of microorganisms that are working in your system.
Directing your appetites.
Yeah. As many as 10 microorganisms per human cell. That's how many they're very tiny. They work inside us. And it's a whole nother level of anatomy, if you will,
mm-hmm.
of what's going on inside us. Their networks are part of us. Some might say that part of our consciousness is part microbial.
Others fear
yeah.
that our consciousness is totally microbial.
Well, there's the fear that they're hijacking
them.
The human system, but they are part of that. They help evolve the human system. So there's this deep relationship that they have with human bioanatomy that we're just beginning to comprehend. So
they're
it's great that they're having...
parents. They're probably the original parents.
Well, they are.
You
I mean, the first life forms,
on the tree
as we know so far, are microorganisms. Yeah,
right.
That's how it all started. That's what we're looking for on Mars. That's why Dr. Damer is going down to JPL this week to vote on where we should land our 2020 Martian lander to look for life.
All right.
Or look for fossilized life.
I'm going to cast a ballot, huh?
Yeah, yeah. They've got several choice points where they think they might find it. And Bruce is, of course, remnants of an ancient hot springs.
That's his vote.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You're not calling Bruce an ancient hot spring.
No.
Well, or a remnant
all of us are. I mean, we all are descended from creatures that came from ancient hot springs. Or so it would appear on the land.
Maybe that's
life
why we're trying to
on
get
the
back.
Land in a hot spring.
Uh-huh.
And maybe that's why we like hot tubs so much. Who knows?
Sounds like a good reason to me.
All right. So I'm glad that they're covering that whole area at this conference. Fascinating. Huh. Also, they're looking at clothing. There's a whole bunch of people looking at clothing design and embedding clothing with technology.
Oh, right. Yeah, eventually you won't have to carry around your computer. You'll just have to make sure your shirt is charged.
Yeah, which run on body heat.
Uh-huh.
Right, so your clothes will start to have more capability than just keeping you warm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's a nice first step for clothes.
Oh, so it runs on body heat, so menopausal women will have more power than people who get cold feet and
I would say they have more
hands.
Power. They'd be able to charge their phones faster for what it's worth department.
Okay. I should give them a leg up.
Yeah. Future fashions. I wonder if they're going to have a fashion show there. Remember we did that with Virtual Worlds back in the 90s? We had fashion shows with
Virtual fashion shows.
Yeah,
virtual fashion shows.
So that's bound to come back as the avatars get to be more interesting.
They are artistic creations. Fashions are very important in the art world.
And here in this case, it's real clothes that have smart capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Like phones, like I think we'll probably see light imbued in clothes more. Certainly that was the case at a lot of the festivals and parties we've been to, like Burning Man.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of clothes have light imbued into them, and the light can be done in very elegant ways where fabric could just shimmer, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, shimmer.
Okay, thanks, Greg. Yeah, he was saying High Fidelity already had a gathering of 450 people last week.
Mm-hmm. That's tried to get us to go to.
I know, but real life was just too compelling, Greg.
That's
we
true.
Just couldn't go into virtual space and you have a dozen of your closest friends around you.
Yeah,
you know,
for
it just
us,
doesn't work.
Real gatherings of meat space people do compete with virtual gatherings of ethereal connected people.
And that is really one of the big issues. How do we get the juice that comes from real life dynamics, real life connecting with people into cyberspace?
That's a good question.
You know, that is, we had that at our birthday party. I think Ranjit, a venture capitalist, was talking to me about this because he's doing a way of getting more party social spaces connected around the world. People also doing a sacred ceremony and connecting them with each other on a global scale. So I thought that was interesting to be able to start creating social spaces.
Yeah.
For
where
real.
The real social fabric exists. It's not all in this fear-based story mongering going on in the mainstream news. It's actually many conversations among people who like each other, want to find out what each other are thinking, flirting with each other, trying to show up at the same fun events. Brave New World.
It is. Two other things before we go. We got 30 seconds.
Go.
Consciousness hacking. Mikey Siegel is part of this trans tech scene. And
what
it
is
looks
consciousness
like,
hacking? That's where you plug
use
your
electromagnetics
brain into
to
electrodes.
Connect with your biology more closely to be able to fine-tune your cognition.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know how coffee will create a certain alertness. You can do that electromagnetically too, but get more fine in the control of what your consciousness is experiencing.
Right.
That's the promise anyway. Also looks like ambisonic architecture, incorporating sound into architecture.
Ambisonic, what a great idea.
So that the room tunes into you and helps you make you feel better.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. All right, folks, so that's coming right up. What's it called again?
That's the TransTech Conference coming up November 9th, 10th in Palo Alto. Transformative Technology Conference. We have a link to it at our links page, drfutureshow.com/links.
See you after the break.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Okay, welcome back to the show. How good. Our guest for 3 o'clock has arrived. The Nordics have come early. Go figure. Okay, news that I wanted to share with you that just came in was regarding the recent book that's been released about Stephen Hawking's and his final thoughts about the nature of the universe.
Okay.
Number one, at this point, doesn't believe in God.
Yeah, well, God is just such a complicated word. But okay, yeah. So he refutes his belief in what he defines as God. He denounces that, says, well, nope, no God, no well, grandfather up there with a grand plan saying, do this, do that.
It's too vast a universe to have a central thing. He also probably had the experience of infinity, seeing how everything is infinite in all directions simultaneously all the time. It's kind of a transcendent an awareness that some scientists have that just say, how could that be one of anything when it's infinite to everything? It just doesn't make sense.
Mm. Right? I think the book Shantaram, yeah, I think, is the best way to have this debate about God, not God.
Yeah.
If you know God, there's no need to explain it to you. There's nothing to argue about. If you don't know God, then there's no way to have a conversation to convince you. So it's a self-perpetuating definition,
yeah,
of reality.
And so it comes down to what you mean by knowing God.
That's right.
And everyone's got their own experience of what that is all about.
Yeah.
So it makes it a very slippery topic.
I think it becomes contentious when somebody defines God inside their own brain and then expects somebody else to share that definition or else. That's the big problem with the imprecise word called God.
Mm, yeah.
There's lots of room for peace and harmony anyway.
That's true. Okay. Well, I'm going to come back to that. A couple other news items I wanted to get in before we just delve into the big questions that Stephen Hawking was saying, like, is there a God?
Okay. Let's
go into some knick-knack reality thing here.
Ready.
You ready?
Okay.
The world's fastest camera has been invented. The fastest camera.
Oh, wow.
10 trillion frames per second.
Ooh, what are they filming at that speed?
Well, what would you film at 10 trillion frames per second?
I can't even imagine what moves that fast.
What moves? Light? Yes, very good. I was going to ask you, well, what moves so fast that you need to really slow it down? Did you really watch it?
All right.
And that's right. It's light.
Einstein would be very happy.
This is
a
camera.
He really could ride the edge of a light beam and see what it looks like.
Well, that's what it does. You're
Take
able to
a
watch,
camera.
You're able to watch light in slow motion.
Cool.
So the scientists are all excited about this one. This
is I can see why.
New play toy. Very
but that's
nice.
An awful lot of extra frames to throw away just to get the one that looks good.
Well, you got to look for those right moments. Mm-hmm. You know, when you first fire a laser, for example, and what happens at the excitation point.
Mm,
you
know, it's always good to know what happens at the excitation point, for sure.
You know, the chemo.
Keep your eye on the prize.
So researchers from Quebec University Institute in Canada, Quebec Sefer, and the California Institute of Technology out here collaborated and developed this compressed ultra-fast photography. They call it CUP.
Oh, cup.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Compressed ultra-fast.
Yeah, and they gotten famous last year because they could do 100 billion frames per second.
Now that's they're up to 10 trillion. They're scoffing at that now.
That's right. So that's really an improvement.
Yeah.
In a very short period of time. The femtosecond cameras, what else can we look at with them? You know, that's the research. What travels at the speed of light? Well, let's see. Let me think about that. Radio waves, too. Television waves, all forms of everything, electromagnetics are all traveling at the speed of light.
So we've opened up a whole new realm of science, a whole new realm of visualization.
Well, we're able to observe the universe that moves at light speeds.
Wow.
In real time. Now, I don't know how far they are able to make the invisible visible. Like, it's easy to maybe study a laser and light for sure. But to study radio waves, you'd have to be able to capture that signature, electromagnetic signature, whatever frequencies they're emanating on.
Wow.
So it'd be interesting to see. I mean, there's a lot of research to do that. They probably can. I don't see why they would limit a camera like this to just electromagnetics seen in the visible light spectrum. Why not use the entire range?
This might be just as important as, say, the invention of the microscope, right? Except that it's for things at the level of the photon instead of just at the level of the cell.
It's looking at super fast processes in the universe, mm-hmm. like electromagnetics. Now, maybe there are living electromagnetic systems we could study, too. Mm-hmm. We look at weather that way. We could look at lightning in slow motion, super slow.
I think our biggest problem in the future is going to be TMI, too much information.
Well, it comes down to what's important to you, what's interesting.
Oh, well, you do that by knowing what's important to you. Intention is more important than ever. Because you have to navigate so much more information to get where you're going.
Yeah, what's really your trajectory through the infinity of what is?
That's right. It's like, hold on, enjoy the ride, don't get distracted, don't look side to side, look forward, and go where you're meant to go.
I think, was it Joseph Campbell said, follow your bliss. There's a lot to that.
I'll follow your bliss.
Well, follow yours. And
well, my bliss is to follow your bliss. I mean, our bliss is pretty interrelated, I would say.
Co-creative reality. Yeah, that's nice. When you can find others that share your bliss, that's fantastic. That's a great thing to do.
Yeah.
That's why I like Maker Faire so much, because you find other people that share your bliss for even crazy ideas like high-speed photography.
Right.
What
then
good is that?
Then you can have your own bliss bubble.
How many of your friends would even be interested in the topic? Right? But, you know, there's at least 20 of them in the Bay Area that you can hang out with.
Right.
Now, with the VR space, you'll be able to hang out more in those worlds and not have to leave your house and still feel like you're having great conversations. I think also I'd be really excited if you're doing photography, you'd be able to demonstrate it in virtual space, photographic experiments in virtual reality.
Hmm.
It'd be interesting.
It kind of reminds me of the fastest knock-knock joke in history. You want to hear it?
Is it over already?
You heard it.
No, go ahead.
That was it.
Oh, missed it. Fast.
No, you got it.
Oh, you're right. Forgot I got it.
That's the thing with those fast things. They're below your level of perception.
I know.
It already happened. Now we're just looking back on it. Ultra fast. It's so fast, it's yesterday.
Feels like it right now, especially since we have no internet.
What's going on with our internet?
I just have to talk about what's on my screen. Look at this.
Talk
my 23andMe
screen
results. I don't know if people care about that.
That's kind of cool. You can talk about the generic 23andMe results, like what people can care about.
I am 99.7% European, 26.6% British and Irish, 24.5% Scandinavian Swedish.
You are just fearless. You're just sharing your DNA.
There you go. 16.9% French and German, and 2.8% Finnish. And that's finished. That's.
Are you done?
Yeah, that's it. I'm done. That's all I'm saying.
The other percentages will be kept private.
The
for
amount of Neanderthal that I am
purposes.
Is private information. Though I admit there is some there. And how it influences me, well, you'll have to ask my microbiome on that.
Oh, and how will they answer?
They will answer in choruses.
Choruses?
Viruses, bacteria operate like a polling system. They chorus. They resonate on certain ranges and frequencies that create harmonics or disharmonics that communicate to each other and to other microbials. It's a whole communications network that we're just beginning to become aware of.
Oh, so if we address your microbes and say, hey, microbes, how you doing today? Then what we do is we look for some spectrum that goes from like purple to green in a nice harmonic mix. And then we know that they're saying great.
Yeah, something like that.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not purple and green, but because you can't see them there, they probably tweak your feelings. You know, they know how to access your brainstem.
Oh, really? So it's a more emotional response.
Yeah, long term, you've co-evolved with humans and go way back. So their ability to play with our emotions and feelings and thoughts are deep. And they're simple intelligences, and then they're subsets of who we are, and it behooves us to be aware of how they communicate with us and create our experiences of reality.
Oh, well, could you let one of your microbial subpersonalities speak on the radio, or is it?
It doesn't work that way.
You have to have different senses for that.
We're humans. You know, we're a multiplicity of channels and frequencies simultaneously. We could simplify. We focus.
Oh, that's why you call it a chorus.
And within their realm too.
Uh-huh.
Around, because remember, they're simple organisms. They can't really think very complicated thoughts.
Uh-huh.
Not like us.
Oh.
Not like our collective higher intelligence. But no, they're much simpler. But they're within our realm to understand, very much so.
So we can ask them yes, no questions.
Yeah, you can, basically.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind.
You do it yourself.
Hey, anyway. Microbes, how are you doing today? That's
obviously,
not what my microbes said. My microbes are having way more fun than that.
That's true. Yeah, I think they are. What does yours sound like, Mrs. Future?
They're laughing, I can tell you that. Yeah.
What does a microbe sound like laughing?
Something like that. All right, we're going to be back after this break.
Let's talk to you shortly, folks.
And so will our microbes.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show. No, still no internet, Billy.
Even though Dr. Future put together this incredible list of links today.
That's okay. It's okay. I'm good.
He's just winging it.
What I often do before I come to the studio is that I'll open up all the pages that I want to talk about on the screen, put it in sleep mode, come down here. So even if the internet's down, we still have some.
Apparently, they just don't like our computers. The internet's working for everybody else here at KSCO, just not us.
You want to play with my iPad, Billy? See what you think? Yeah, he's thinking hard here. Okay. Well, in terms of
Skynet
machines,
has gone sentient.
Well, maybe. You know,
we're
think
being censored, Dr. Future. We're just way too happy for this current reality.
Now, here it is. Now, look, NASA's sleeping opportunity? That's right, is a rover called Opie.
Oh, I see. I thought somehow NASA was having trouble sleeping. Okay.
Oh, no. NASA's sleeping too well. That's the problem in this case.
Okay. Opportunity. Opportunity, wake up. Yeah. Are you out there?
Opie is there. Brief recap of this. We had a rover called Opie that's been cruising around on Mars for 14 years now. Way past its
six-month deadline or something, right? They were going to study stuff
14 years.
Yeah.
And the worst dust storm ever hit Mars last May.
Yeah.
It's not just a local dust storm, not like something we'd see at Burning Man in the desert.
Yeah,
no.
Burners got nothing on Mars.
This was a planetary-wide dust storm. Everything
All
was
of Mars was shaking it up. Just tired of the old paradigm.
So for our little solar-powered rover, that was not good news.
No, clean slate. We're about to be invaded by Earth. Let's start with covering up all the old stuff.
That's it. Covering up. She had to fold her in her solar panels, hunker down for the storm, which she did.
And right.
Then she got in what we would call the safe mode on a Windows machine. It was a low energy state. Save energy. Don't do anything except you have a little timer to wake up.
Right. A timer that also sends out a little beep on a tiny schedule.
If the timer is based on when you can.
And it tells the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter that it's still there. It's like, beep.
Yeah, and we have an orbiter around looking for any signs of life from our Opie. Mm-hmm. And so far, nothing. But the scientists in charge saying, don't give up hope yet. They haven't. They still think that, even though it's been months since they've heard from our sleeping robot.
Because it's been a terrible storm.
And still is.
Since May.
It's cleaning up now. They said, all hope isn't lost yet. A windy period on Mars is coming up. A windy period without dust, it seems. Dust clearing season, they call it. So after the big dust storm, they have a dust clearing season.
Oh, I think they need a better name for seasons on Mars.
Dust clearing season?
The windy
season. Oh, it sounds
season.
Very appealing.
Okay. And
you must come visit during the dust clearing season. The air is so clean. It's November through January.
Oh, that's when their sudden wind bursts could possibly clean off the solar panels and
that's right.
give us an extra glimmer of charge.
That's right. That's right. So the global dust storm peaked. They don't have wipers on the panels. That's the problem.
Why have wipers when you've got dust storms and windy periods?
Yeah, you got a point. Less weight. But still, there's something good about windshield wipers. I don't know. You should have them.
Well, problem with wipers is when you run out of fluid, they just leave streaks.
I'm sure somebody made that point. We're listening so far, nothing, but they say that the windy season's coming up in November, so let's wait till then.
We're hoping for you, Opie.
Yeah, we'll keep you posted on that, folks.
Okay. Now, you know, you could just go straight to your Link's outline page and just dazzle people with all the collected information here, just in like soundbite forms.
Yeah, okay. All right, okay. I'll do some of that. Briefly then, Google's very happy with their new censored Chinese search engine.
Oh, really?
It's testing well.
All right. Let's hope censorship isn't evil.
The censorship engine is working quite well. A censored search engine
for
China.
Maybe instead of calling it Google, we should call it Google. It'll be the censorship Google. Google.
Sundar Pichai, the CEO, turns out we'll be able to serve over 99% of the queries, he says.
Okay, 99% of the queries don't need to be censored?
That's right.
Only 1%?
Less than 1%, I'd say, of human communications needs to be censored.
Less than 1%.
Yeah.
That's quite a lot of censorship in the hands of somebody who is like looking over your shoulder.
The lousy 1%.
I mean, can you imagine if you had to get approval for every 100th word that you said and not know if it was going to be bleeped out or not? That's just not human. That's not freedom. That's not freedom of speech. That's, well, I don't know what to call it. It's definitely control over others.
Well, Google's doubled down on the search engine. It was very controversial. A lot of people think they shouldn't do it. It's called Project Dragonfly. Mm-hmm. It has the potential to expose to the world what's happening in China. Because by what's being searched, and what's being censored, we'll know.
What I would like is if searches are being censored, I think the censored searches, everything that actually gets extracted and censored, should be published on a public fake news site. Like, it's being censored, and so it's already being flagged, like, don't listen to this, don't believe it, this is not officially sanctioned, but at least it would still be part of the transparency of freedom of speech.
Well, I don't think the Chinese government would go for that. I think Chinese security wants to know that information personally. And
somebody gets to
but,
read
you know,
it.
I'm thinking that, you know, if it's
only
designed
the person
by,
with the off button
it's
gets
designed
to read
by
it.
Google, I mean, naturally the NSA is going to want a backdoor into that. And, you know, and so suddenly it will make us way more aware of what China's doing in
real
time.
That would be
a
really good name for the
what's being censored.
For the censored internet. Okay, so
yeah, it's a whole
Google,
story. It could be a Netflix series about doing stories on what's being censored.
That's right. Just the censorship and all the censorship.
Yeah, I like it. But you see, that's the thing, is that things are getting exposed as quickly as they're becoming secret. And so it creates not just drama, but entertainment.
Right. Yeah, you could double post. You know how you do like reply all? So instead of posting just to like one site that gets censored, you post all. And one of the places you post is a watchdog site that all it does is match what's posted from what's not there. And anything that's missing automatically gets flagged.
Everyone would have access to this, huh?
Well,
you think you shouldn't be restricted
access?
I'm not
talking about access. I'm just saying, like, censorship is inherently not open source. It's inherently putting somewhat ratings. Yes, I believe that we should lift the conversation of the internet to a more civilized level and not just let the trolls dominate. But the way that we do it has got to foster freedom of speech, not elevating false authorities and petty tyrants to positions of controlling others. So how do we do that? I don't know. We have to debate. We have to try different methods.
Yeah, and certainly this opens up the possibilities with playing with censorship. Search engines, what do they tell us about the cultures that are censored? They tell us everything. They tell us nothing, but they're really good.
Yeah. Here we have the opposite of censorship, so we can't tell what's true. You know, fake news is like, believe it if you want. It's out there.
Another layer to what is.
That's right. Another layer to what is. Would you rather have the control frequency of screened information or the chaos frequency?
Or would you rather know what people are really searching for?
Yeah. I'm kind of curious. I loved it when Google used to have the top searches rated and you could look at the list of what people's top searches were. Seems to me like Jesus was always pretty high up there.
Yeah,
and
I see it. I see good stuff for KSU.
Satan.
Who watches porn more, Republicans or Democrats?
There you go.
And what kind? The information out there is unbelievable.
What the searching public wants to know.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Anyway, good luck, China. You're going to need it.
Yeah, we're all going to need it. We need a world that works for everyone. Mm-hmm. Oh, hey, we have a caller. I guess we touched a nerve there.
Okay.
Want to see what Andreas from Aptos has to say?
Sure.
Andre from Aptos, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for the kind welcome. You're very astute, Mrs. Future. It's very not human of them to be suppressing humanity like that. I don't know if you guys have talked about this. I don't listen regularly. I listen every once in a while. But a few weeks ago, you have a great show. I like it. I just don't have an opportunity all the time.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Well, but we're on the web all the time. So if you put it on your podcast list, it'll be there for you. Should be interesting.
Right.
We try to be topical.
Yeah, I like what I'm hearing today. A few weeks ago, there was an article that came out. I think it was from CNBC or something along those lines. It was about Google's former CEO saying that in the future, he predicts that at around 2029 or 2025, somewhere in the near future, the internet's going to split into two, and one is going to be dominated by China and dominate Africa, Europe, and all that area, and the hub is going to be China. Did you guys hear about this or talk about this?
Nope.
No, I've heard similar ideas, though. But that's, there's a lot of reasons why that won't happen, but that's interesting, though.
He was predicting that and then saying that the other internet would be headed in the U.S. and it would be more of a Wild West, free speech, anything goes type of internet with, you know, still some law and order, but oriented towards humanity and our natural rights.
Yeah, good opposites in many ways.
Yeah.
Let's devote some time to talking about this, but we got to go to the middle of the show break.
Can I hold on till after the... Okay.
So welcome back, Andre.
Hey, thank you. So I was just talking about how the internet might split into two.
Yeah.
And it could be a good thing. You're saying you can't see how that would happen, but the next guy that I was going to talk about, his name is Dr. Shiva. I don't remember his last name. He's of Indian descent. It's hard for me to catch those last names. They're really long and complicated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he's the only Dr. Shiva with a V, Shiva, who is running against Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts right now for this U.S. Senate.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to look him up, and he did this interview, and during part of this interview, he said that, he also holds a patent for email, some email protocol when email first came out, and he has this idea of creating a new free internet within the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
It includes setting up a bunch of net antennas or net something. I don't know exactly what he calls them, but it's a new network using the post office and just setting up a bunch of antennas in all the different post offices around the country and creating a new internet that's regulated as like official email, like how mail is treated, email would be as well. And he talked about how essential it was to free speech during the colonial days, how the mail system was so essential back then, and how email is now, and the internet in general, and how it should be protected under the same laws and treated with the same kind of regard. So there's an idea of how it should happen, how a new type of internet could be created.
Yeah, I think so. I think it could be created quickly and easily in many different ways. It seems to me that the internet technology is cheap, ubiquitous, out-of-control technology. You can throw up a net in no time if you wanted.
And
if there's a need for it, we will. You know,
and the invention of the internet was put together by people who were looking to strategize how do you preserve freedom outside of centralized control. And that is fundamental structure of the internet, is that it's pockets of individuals and vast networks of individuals, and there are the market makers, the people who are the big siphons to carry lots of riders at the same time. But the very nature of the internet is such that it's an add-on kind of system. And so in a world where we'll have 10 billion people and a huge percentage of them will have technical savvy and smarts. I would liken it to how people were able to get free cable by having technology during the cable broadcast eras. There'll certainly be mainstream channels, but there'll also be lots and lots of completely unrepressible private channels. That's how the world works. The big and the small play together. So I really appreciate your call, Andre.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew.
Right.
Okay. More to come.
Okay. Well, I like that as future. You got a nice long thought out of you there.
Oh, and you actually understood it? I wasn't incomprehensible this
no,
time?
No, you weren't. That was good. That was
oh, good. I'm so happy.
Personal and lots of personals, actually. I agree. I'd take you times 10. I need it to still be true.
Oh.
Thank you.
I think that's a compliment.
It is. It is.